Welcome to the World According to Post Show podcast. Our guest tonight was Beth Accomando. She's a film critic for KPBS, an Emmy Award winning producer and writer, and has edited sequels from the film franchise Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which happen to be called classics. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
How did you like being on the show tonight?
It was fun. I was really impressed with the little bit you guys did with the interrogation scene, turning it into a whole little Hollywood production. That was clever. That was a lot of fun. I think that was my high point.
Nice. Now, before going into the show tonight, what kind of were your expectations, or what did you think the show was going to be?
Well, when Amy first asked me to do this, I had absolutely no idea what it was going to be. And in fact, at first I thought it was going to be more of a kind of a roast where you guys bring someone up and make fun of them. So I told Amy that I wouldn't say yes until I came out to see one. And then I realized that you weren't going to really put me on the spot. And so after I saw that, I realized it was more about just kind of coming forward and telling some things about your life, maybe some embarrassing things, but just kind of revealing a few things, and then you guys riff off it.
So you would recommend this to anyone out there?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of fun.
Now, switching tracks a little bit, what is a normal day in the life of Beth Accomando?
I don't think I have normal days. They're all a bit chaotic and crazy, and I never know what to expect. I don't sleep much, for one thing, so I tend to be up all hours. But usually a day will involve seeing a movie. I watch movies almost every day, sometimes for work, sometimes just for fun. Usually involves baking something, because I love to cook, and I love to cook food that is themed to my movie parties. And in fact, my friend just got married and had Godzilla as the theme for his wedding, which I should have mentioned tonight. But I made 150 Godzilla cookies, so.
Is that part of a little film you also made?
Yes, we did a little film. We did a fan video where Godzilla came and stomped the only cultural landmark in Lemon Grove, which is the giant lemon.
Made out of cement.
Yes. Yes. But you know, Big G's big, man. He can crush that thing.
Yeah, he definitely can. Now, being a film critic, sounds like an amazing job, a dream job, just being able to watch films and then say what you think about them. Is it really all that great?
For the most part, it's fabulous. I get to watch movies and talk about my opinions, which is great. The only time that it's bad is when you actually have to see movies that are horrible, and then it becomes a bit painful. I mean, I had a hard time getting through just the trailer for Larry Crown, and the idea of watching the whole movie was terrifying. So, or Sex and the City. That's when it's work, man. It is tough work. One of the amusing things that has happened as a film critic is that you don't realize that sometimes your opinions really affect people. So one time I mentioned that I didn't like perky blondes like Doris Day and Debbie Reynolds, and the Women's White Supremacist League sent me a death threat. They said, "We know where you live and we're going to get you." I also got a death threat for not liking Sucker Punch. Fanboys, man, they are not happy when you don't like their films. So, I think one of them said they wanted to lock me in a church and torch it. One guy said that he wished he had a friend named Beth so he could punch her in the face.
Wait, really?
Yeah,
of course, I'm jumping in.
Yeah.
So, death threats are, that's a bad day. That's a bad day on the job.
I don't know, on some level, I'd rather, have pissed somebody off really badly than to have people just read my reviews and walk away and go, "Hey, what do you want for dinner?" On the plus side though, you know, I do get people who will send me notes and say something like, "Oh, I saw a film and I didn't really like it. And then I read your review and it made me look at the film in a different way. And I really appreciate that." So, you know, things like that can really make my day. Or somebody who said, I went and I visited some friends at the opera, and this woman came up to me and she said, "You know, I never wanted to see a zombie film, but I read your reviews and you seemed like a rational, intelligent person, and you kept talking about zombie movies. So I tried one and I liked it." So to me, that's like, that really makes my day.
What's your thoughts on, TV's trying to do the zombie thing, you know, with, I'm not forgetting the name of it. Walking Dead. What are your thoughts on TV zombie stuff versus film? Do you like?
Well, Walking Dead has me kind of conflicted because Greg Nicotero does the makeup effects and they are spectacular. And there are individual scenes in that show that I think are great at capturing what a zombie apocalypse would be like. But man, I cannot put up with the soap opera. I cannot. Like, zombie films are not about family drama. Zombie films are usually about, zombies are usually in some sort of social context. Like, George Romero, the first film he did, Night of the Living Dead, it was about racism. Dawn of the Dead was about consumerism. Day of the Dead was about vivisectionism. Land of the Dead was about corporate America. I mean, he always had some sort of social context. Zombies are kind of like this blank slate. So to me, like, the film version of World War Z and The Walking Dead, to me, are the signs that zombies have become too popular and they've crossed over into the mainstream, and now they become these, like, melodramas. And they're not horror and they're not socially conscious and they're not quite fun for me.
The soap, yeah.
The soap opera.
I feel that happens with a lot of TV shows that are kind of either edgy or different. One of them being Dexter, when it first started, I felt it was much different than what it later became.
Yeah, definitely.
And, I mean, I guess that's a thing of, like, well, how do you keep the audience coming back? And you were just like, just kill more people.
Don't make a love triangle.
I know.
The women in that show were awful.
Oh, yeah.
I kept praying for them all to get killed.
I do that all. Some of the shows that I watch, I do. Can you please
just kill her?
Kill the sister already.
Oh, yeah.
So, over the course of your career, what have been some highlights that you see that you've had from being a film critic?
Well, personally, one highlight was getting to interview Chow Yun-fat, who is a Hong Kong action superstar. It also was one of my more embarrassing times, too. The first time I interviewed him was great. It was, he wasn't well known here in the United States at all. He literally walked, like, across the street from where he was to the hotel, and we sat and talked for an hour, and it was fabulous. And then I went to interview him a second time. And I had driven up to LA, and it was, my friend was with me because I was using this new audio gear and he was supposed to help me, and it was raining and I was really flustered because we got up there just at the last minute, and I walk in the door and he comes up to me and he grabs my hand, kisses me on both cheeks and goes, "Beth, how are you doing? How are things in San Diego?" Every thought went out of my head, and I felt like the screaming girls in A Hard Day's Night, you know, where I was just like, oh my God, he just kissed me. And, you know, back in my head, I'm thinking, like, he has a good publicist who told him this is Beth Accomando from San Diego. You know, she interviewed you before. But it was like, I totally forgot my questions, and my friend who was running audio for me put his head down and was giggling and just going like, oh my God, Beth, pull it together. So that was a high point, getting to meet him. I truly, and it's funny because he does work this amazing charm. I was at a press junket and the publicists were all kind of very upset because he was one of the actors, and they go like, oh, he hasn't told us what his plan is. He hasn't agreed to any of the interviews. Oh, he's such a pain in the butt. And they said, all right, he just arrived. We're going to go talk to him. And they went off and they were all just kind of like, eh. 10 minutes later, they walk out of his room giggling and smiling and going like, oh, he's so wonderful. Like, and he is. He's just like absolutely charming.
Don't you love when you meet people who, you know, they're famous and they keep it really real. They are really normal and they make you feel very special. I just love
running across
these people. It's
he's
awesome.
Great. So that was the highlight. And being a zombie, which wasn't directly connected to doing film reviews, but I turned it into an NPR story. I got to get my brains blown out. I had a fabulous time doing that. I was a hero zombie. I got this amazing makeup job. It was great.
Kind of leads to my next question, which was, if you could play any role in a movie, what would it be? But it sounds like you already did that.
Yeah, I want to be a zombie. My goal is to get an IMDb page where it lists only zombie roles, and it's like, you know, third zombie from the left, zombie with his brains blown out, disemboweled zombie. I mean, by the time I die for real and maybe come back, I want to see just a list of, you know, reanimated roles.
We must do this. I feel like, how can we help you?
staying on the zombie genre and stuff, now that it has become extremely popular and they have the survival guides, they have classes in college, and with the TV shows and everything, and it kind of, like you said, when it's TV shows and they add the drama in, it kind of loses the rawness of what it was. How, I guess, where would you see zombie genre
5 years from now or 10 years from now.
Zombies are amazingly durable. I think they go through cycles and phases. For a while, they kind of went away, and then they came back pretty strong. I think, you know, like Shaun of the Dead, I think, helped to revive zombies in a very clever way. And I think the Walking Dead stuff, that's eventually going to run its course, and people will kind of forget about it, and it'll fall to the wayside, and it'll go away for a little bit, and then some filmmaker's going to get inspired to do something really clever, and it'll reignite it. And even, you know, during this time, there have been some really clever zombie films. There's Fido with Billy Connolly, who plays a pet dog, pet zombie. It's very much done like Lassie, and there's little Timmy, and Fido's his friend. And then there's this great Canadian film called Pontypool, where zombieism is spread through language. That's how you get infected. And so it's like a zombie film without technically zombies, and it's brilliant. So there's always, I think, something interesting going on in the genre, even though some of the most popular stuff might not be the best.
Following just, I guess, in the genre of horror, do you still get surprised when you see some of these movies, like of what they show that you might not be expecting, or actually get a little scare or a jolt? Does that still happen, or are you just so...
Less and less often. It's a rare experience. I remember I had the opportunity to interview Clive Barker, and I was asking him about what horror films he watches and what he likes about horror, and the description he used, he says, I wish I could be a virgin again, you know, at that point where you don't, you know, you've never been to a horror film, you don't know all the tropes, you know, it surprises you. So there are still films that will creep me out or give me a jolt, but it's not nearly as often as it used to be. So it's kind of like the bar keeps going a little higher, but thankfully there are filmmakers out there who keep meeting that mark. So I'm always hopeful, and there's always something out there that's good.
Do you remember the last movie that gave you a
The film? Last movie, let me see. Gosh, I see so many of them. Well,
like, one of the popular ones, like Paranormal Activity, people said that was really scary.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Paranormal Activity, I admired the first one for using its budgetary limits and all that to full advantage, and I took a group of teen critics to go see it. Now, I have to confess, it did not scare me at all. Those kids were so terrified. They came out and they're like, Alfredo, can we spend the night with you? We don't want to go home alone. He goes, that film was wrong because scary stuff happened during the day. That's just wrong. So, so I mean, I don't know if it's like the most recent one, but we recently showed a film called Inside, which is a French film. In which it's a woman who terrorizes this pregnant woman. And that was not so much scary, but, I mean, the woman who played the attacker was really creepy. And, you know, there's a point where, like, she first appears and you just kind of go. And that film was, I think, from the 80s. But we just showed it recently. I run a film series called The Film Geeks at the Digital Gym, and we show genre films all the time. So... there are still films like that where, you know, they push the envelope in a certain way and, you know, go to places where you're surprised.
Speaking of Paranormal Activity, mm-hmm. and just, I guess, scary movies, do you believe in the supernatural or ghosts?
I want to. I mean, I can't say I've never had a paranormal experience. I've never had an experience where I thought I've seen a ghost or felt a, you know, a presence or something. But I feel like there should be that. There should be something kind of beyond our current knowledge. So I'm kind of hopeful that something will happen that will prove that. But, you know, personally, I haven't experienced anything. But I don't discount it.
No. They say the Lafayette Hotel is haunted. So I hear.
There's a few places.
Yeah.
The Guild Theater was supposedly had its own ghost, and I think the Globe and the Hotel Del, I think, is supposed to. Oh, and the 10th Avenue Theater, where my friend Miguel used to run his horror film festival, there's a story of a young girl who died, and it used to be a church, and she died, and I guess the priest who was watching her felt guilty about the fact that she had died, and then he committed suicide in the stairwell, and so supposedly, like, there's three or four ghosts in that theater, and that's where I did an interview with him about horror, and we sat, like, in the hallway where...
That's...
And we were hoping something creepy would happen. There was a few funny noises, but, you know, nothing we can verify.
I know. I feel like we should have a Lafayette Hotel. Like, you come back and we have a little seance here.
Yeah.
Like, maybe in a Halloween. Beth's here running it. Nicole.
You mentioned when you were on stage, your parents took you to...
In a yes.
you could talk a little bit about that, kind of that experience, I guess. And how that now has also changed for, I guess, allowing kids to see certain movies. But also, what, if you remember, what was the first scary movie you went by yourself or that you decided you wanted to go to?
I don't remember what the first film I went, like, by myself was. I do remember being impacted by Suspiria, the Dario Argento Italian horror film. I remember going with my friend when we were in high school, and after that opening scene, I just remember my friend was just, like, shaking, and, like, I think we should leave. But my parents took me to films, not really thinking all the way through what impact it might have on me, and I remember seeing The Collector when I was about 6 years old, which is a Terrence Stamp film where he kidnaps women, and this film called A Boy 10 Feet Tall, where a boy, as I remember it, I've never seen the film since, so I don't know if this is right, but I believe he got handcuffed to someone who dies, and they have to drag the body through the jungle, and that just had a real impact on me. And I used to watch Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, and that used to give me nightmares. But I think, you know, I have a personality that's kind of competitive. And so, to me, being scared by those films kind of upped the ante and goes like, okay, that scared me. I'm going to see something even scarier, and I'm going to learn not to be scared by it. And so, you know, I kept, like, upping the ante and seeing stuff that was more and more scary. I do know that I put off seeing The Exorcist for probably 10 years because I was raised Catholic. And somehow, yeah, I didn't really want to go there. Yeah, I can tell you a funny story about my ex in horror. My ex-husband, we went to go see The Evil Dead, which is one of my all-time favorite films. And 10 or 20 minutes into it, he said, I don't like this movie, we should go. And I said, oh, but wait, I'm having a really good time. And he's like, he waited a few more minutes. He goes, I'll pay you $20 to leave. I was like, no, I don't want to leave. I really like this movie. And then he turned his back to the screen, crossed his arms, crossed his legs, and wouldn't watch the film anymore and was totally pissed that we stayed. And I think back to that moment and go, that was a sign from God. I should have known then that I was married to the wrong man. Sadly, I stayed married like another 15 years. So, you know, horror was telling me, and I wasn't listening.
If he went up to $100, would you have
left? No.
How high did he have to go?
There was nothing that would have made me leave that theater. Nothing.
That is a true horror. I love that.
For now, Evil Dead, and what are your thoughts on remakes of all these kind of cult films?
I can't say that any of the there have been some remakes that are good. I mean, the remake of The Evil Dead was okay. It wasn't bad. It didn't capture the spirit of the original one. It had some pretty good gore effects and a couple of funny, scary moments, but had nothing of the charm of the original. You know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake was pretty bad, and, you know, some of these other ones have been. But, you know, I don't want to condemn remakes just as a whole, because there was a film called We Are What We Are, which was an American remake of the Mexican horror film about cannibalism. And that film was brilliant. And what makes a remake good is you have to have a real reason to remake it. You have to have a new vision for it. Like when John Carpenter remade The Thing, the political world had changed, and his film was very specifically about this kind of paranoia during the Reagan era, how nobody trusted anybody. And so he completely remade the film and gave it a whole different tone. So I think remakes can be good. There haven't been that many recently. I mean, the film like The Carrie remake was awful. The Let the Right One In remake was awful, but, you know, I don't want to give a blanket condemnation to remakes.
I think also the only good thing of maybe making a remake is getting new people into the genre that maybe didn't know.
Yeah.
And so then if they see this remake, I know I've seen not necessarily of horror and stuff, but either spaghetti westerns or different movies that have been remade. If I find out that it was a remake, I'll go and I'll watch the original one.
And that's the right way. And then, go seek out the original.
Yeah, it really is. And that's just a way to learn a little bit more about it. If someone had to play you in a movie, who would you want it to be?
Oh, man. Chow Yun-Fat, but then I'd have to do a whole gender swap.
That is best answer.
Hands down. That's great. There's no one other. That's
because he's awesome.
We'll get in touch with him.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I had to find a female, I could go with Michelle Yeoh, because she kicks some ass.
Okay.
She kicks some ass.
How would I know
she
Michelle?
She's in Super Cop with Jackie Chan. She was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon also.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
I like
that. She was also in Tomorrow Never Dies, the Bond film, she did her own stunts and stunt choreography in that film.
Is she really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
She's a former ballet dancer.
Aren't they all like Jackie Chan too, studied dance? Did you guys know this?
Because he went through like the Peking Opera School, you have to learn like everything.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so much that they were just letting him learn and teaching.
He was being forced to do it.
From the interviews I've heard.
It's grueling.
Yeah.
It's grueling.
Or you don't get...
It's not a happy... Yeah.
No, it wasn't a happy place.
not a happy place.
But we're in a happy place.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit more about the Film Geeks? Because it sounds like... Sure. How did that start?
The Media Arts Center opened a little micro cinema on 29th and El Cajon called the Digital Gym Cinema. And a group of my friends who are programmers, Miguel Rodriguez is from Horrible Imaginings, Phil Lorenzo is from the Asian Film Festival, Michael McQuiggan is from Film Out. So we all work with other film groups. I was working with a student festival called Film School Confidential. And basically, we saw this venue, which is like 50 seats, and we fell in love with it. And we were afraid that it would go away if enough people didn't come out to use it. And so what we decided to do, because we also are all genre fans, we decided that we would take some late night programming slots, like Friday and Saturdays at 10, and we would program genre films, mostly horror, but we also do a mystery kung fu theater. And try to get a different crowd out there and try to develop an audience that will support horror, and so that we can bring films here that wouldn't play otherwise. We showed the film We Are What We Are, and it was the San Diego premiere. It played here one night. It was the only opportunity people would have to see it on a big screen. So we're really proud of the fact that we have brought films, and we brought a film called American Mary by the Soska twins. Again, that wouldn't have played here in San Diego if we didn't bring it out here. And that venue is gorgeous. It's got comfortable seats, great sound, great projection, and it's a nice place for people to meet and see movies that push the envelope a little bit. And we have a little complimentary beer tasting beforehand. Lightning Brewery is our sponsor. And then I make desserts themed to the movies. We've had shattered glass cupcakes where the cupcakes bleed. We've had Cthulhu cookies to go with a film on H.P. Lovecraft. We had some crosses, some candy, chocolate lollipop crosses to go with the devils. So, you know, I try to think of stuff that, you know, goes with the films.
How do people, like, find out more?
You can either join. We have a meetup group called the Film Geeks at the Digital Gym, and we also have a Facebook page called the Film Geeks at the Digital Gym. If you join either of those, you will find out about all of our screenings. Plus, you will be invited to our monthly free screening called Film Geeks Living Room Edition, where we show a film, we don't tell you what it is, you have to trust us, but we pick really great stuff, and it's free, and you get to come out and enjoy a movie and have a good time.
That was a much better question than I was going to ask. And you didn't pick anything for us.
I know, I was thinking about that.
What happened?
At the last minute, I was thinking I should have made a themed dessert to go with this.
And you have to come back. That's all this is. You have to come back.
Yeah.
I have a very nice coffin cake, which is red velvet cake, but it's shaped like a coffin.
Will you be coming back to find us again, bro?
Yes. I was going to say, you mean like back on stage or just in the audience? But yes, I would come back either way.
We'd love to have you back on stage. But yeah, just kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
And Beth, you said that, you know, your competitor, you like things that scare you. And
yes.
Improv is something that scares you a little bit. Would you ever try improv?
Yeah, I could be talked into. You know, a friend of mine just asked me to do Jello wrestling, and I said, yeah, maybe. So, yeah, you know, why not?
That's the spirit. I love hearing that.
I can give it a try, yeah.
Yes.
Then we could extend this KPBS story and, you know, we can come and watch me humiliate myself trying to learn improv.
You got this.
We can film a class. Oh, my God. Yeah. What have I just gotten into?
I know, right? That's kind of like a horror movie. That's the new clever way for horror movies.
Horror improv.
Ooh.
I could be good at that.
Because
I'm good at creating ways to kill people.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on what you saw on the stage tonight or just of this interview, I guess?
I enjoy improv because of the energy that it has. So I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, I will say when you come out to a comedy place, I mean, the greatest fear is that you go and someone will bomb because there's nothing worse, I don't think, than being in a room where, like, comedy is falling flat. So, like, that's always a big fear. But here I've seen some really great stuff. I've seen the one that Amy was in where it's a musical improv. And they did – I threw out the word zombie and they did an hour-long zombie musical, which was fabulous. So I've seen a lot of great stuff here. It's been a lot of fun. So I'm happy to come back and see some more.
Awesome. I lied. I have one more question.
Okay.
Love it.
You said you have all your friends, each one loves a different genre. Do you guys get into arguments about what's the better genre?
Most of my friends, we like similar genres. We do get into serious arguments. Like, we're doing a Godzilla marathon this weekend, and, you know, we had a long debate about which films get in and which films don't, and, you know, what gets priority. And so, yeah, we have some arguments about stuff like that, definitely.
Thank you so much for being our guest tonight, not only on stage, but agreeing to be part of this podcast. And let's talk about that horror genre.
Horror improv. I love it. We can do different murders each night.
Yes.
So this
Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm Dino Spazzini.
Beth Accomando.
And I'm Courtney Flynn.
Till next time.